Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks AFC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week, and back with a slightly different episode this week. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me from across the water in San Diego, the world's best transatlantic football podcast, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, wow. We really are the transatlantic football podcast. We've got everything covered, haven't we? 5,000 miles apart.
New strapline, that.
Yeah, we need something, mate. So that'll do. Everything's good over here, mate. It was obviously a big weekend of football and very different to settle down and watch a game of that size and that importance at like 8:30 in the morning. Your brain's not really ready for it, but wow, took like how many seconds for the first flashpoint? Like 3 seconds. So I was into it from the third second, and just loved that game, mate.
I mean, it was an incredible game between Arsenal and City at the weekend, and we thought it might be a nice place to start a discussion around sort of era-defining Premier League rivalries. So we're going to spend the first 20 minutes, first segment of this podcast, talking about Arsenal City, about the game, but also about what it represented, and maybe there is that changing of the guard that we've seen over the last couple of seasons that's maybe seen Arsenal push into the ascendancy as City's main challengers. And then the rest of the episode, we're going to walk back down memory lane a little bit. We're going to discuss that famous rivalry between Liverpool and City, Pep against Klopp, that defined the Premier League for a number of years. We're going to look back at who City's challengers really have been since sort of 2010. And there's a couple of different teams that have been there, and then also work our way back through the eras of Jose Mourinho, Sir Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, go back through those rivalries that defined a Premier League era. And then a little bit of history towards the end. We're going to look at the very early days of the Premier League and look at that rivalry that sort of erupted between United and between Newcastle and Blackburn Rovers as well, right at the kind of genesis, early days of the Premier League. Now, obviously, football started before 1992. So before we get loads of comments about why we haven't talked about these, we had to put an end date on it somewhere. And that felt like an appropriate moment for us to call it. So we're going to just talk about the rivalries of the Premier League era, but other eras are available and you can look at them and dive into them at your leisure should you wish. But DJ, it felt like the flashpoints of this rivalry, the aggro boiling over, the kind of incendiary nature of the game, the fact that both fan bases seem incredibly disappointed with the outcomes, with the decisions, all of this. It was vintage in so many ways and a throwback to some of the classic rivalries we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely captivating from second one. And on Patreon on Friday, we previewed this game and we'd looked at how it would break down and everything like that. And my ultimate fear was that they cancel each other out. Possibly we even see a 0-0 if they both shut up shop and we get this game of chess open up. Everybody was a bit scared. Oh, how wrong I was. This was one of the most tense, spiteful games of football I've seen in a long time. And yeah, it was proper Barclays stuff, mate. Like this was a throwback to what we used to see through the eras, going back to Arsenal Man United clashes, going back to, yeah, maybe Liverpool City clashes when so much was on the line. I think in this episode, we're going to talk about rivalries and what a rivalry really is. This isn't a local rivalry thing. We're not talking about derbies.
We're not talking about derbies. It's important to kind of distinguish between the two, I think.
We're not talking about derbies or grudge matches. We're talking about rivalries in the sense of teams at the top of their game competing for top honours, right? And defining an era of football. That's what we're looking at here. So when we talk now about this game that we've seen at the weekend between City and Arsenal, we're opening up a comparison to what we've seen in the past in the Premier League. And it was right up there in terms of all the narratives around it, the quality of football. Like, they're brilliant for everyone on that pitch is a brilliant footballer. But it just kind of turned into this fight. It was like a tear up. It was brilliant. And I loved the fact that at the end, I was waiting for the tunnel fight, right? That used to be a big part of Premier League football. That's what we used to wait for. Of course, that's not like what it should be about. But I think one of the big things, Jack, is that footballers get thrown at them as they don't care enough, right? And they're in it for the money. And sometimes like the league doesn't live up to expectations, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes you could definitely say that it looks that way, but it's not that way. And this was absolute proof of footballers, of managers, of fans that still love and care about this game. And there's so many flashpoints. If you're going to look at the Havertz and Rodri collision at the start of the game, if you're going to talk about Haaland throwing the ball at Gabriel's head after the goal goes in at 2-2, if you're going to talk about the Trossard red card, whatever it is, whatever upset you on the day, that's football. That is what this league and rivalries at the top of this league should induce. And, oh, mate, it was so good to see it. I'm still not over it, to be honest. I'm still absorbing it. I haven't watched the game in full again, but I might this week. I really might, because there was still so much I feel I haven't taken in from it. I think one of the things that might just hold back this rivalry is between Arteta and Guardiola.
Right.
I don't know they're ever going to go at each other because there's too much respect there already.
So this was something I was going to come on to about this game, right? And look, we spoke about the actual game and the decisions and all of the kind of gameplay in depth on our Monday Postbox episode. So we did a good 40 minutes on City against Arsenal. And I don't think we need to necessarily tread that ground again. Please do go over to the Patreon and have a listen. We'd love to have you on there if you're not already. But more than that, I think there's kind of an element here where over the last two seasons, there's obviously a lot of shared ground between City and Arsenal. And now Arsenal have come as runners-up in the last two seasons, sort of by surprise a little bit. So a lot of people surprised in 22-23, to less people surprised, I think, last year in 23-24. And coming into this season, a lot of people couldn't split them in terms of who they thought was going to win the title. Now, we've obviously seen an element of Arne Slot's Liverpool becoming a wild card in this. But I think that what changed this time is that over the last 2 years or so, there's been an incredible amount of respect between these two teams. And there is an element of that I really, really like, because obviously Mikel Arteta came through as Pep's assistant at Manchester City, moved over to Arsenal. But on top of that, I think you think about the players that have also made that jump with him in Gabriel Jesus and Oleksandr Zinchenko. I think there was a sense that when these two played each other at the end of games, there was that kind of, okay, yeah, good game. We're both really at it, but there's a real level of respect. We haven't seen the amount of spite, I don't think, that we saw in this game. And that's, I think, what elevated this from being a really good game between two sides competing for the title to the point that everyone is now discussing it as, okay, is this now, you know, can we pull an end at 2022 and say that that's the end of the Liverpool City rivalry as it kind of was. We go, okay, from 22 onwards, is the defining rivalry of the Premier League now Manchester City against Arsenal? Is that how it's going to be? And look, a lot of this depends on what the next few years look like, right? And we have the 115 kept charges hanging over City. We don't know what's going to happen there. We don't know if Liverpool are going to re-usurp Arsenal as the main contenders. There might be other factors in here that we're not considering as of yet. But we're talking about this as kind of this era. And whilst it's been a great kind of battle on pitch up to this point, I think this tipping over the edge to kind of the words that were said afterwards, you know, we saw Erling Haaland telling Mikel Arteta that, you know, he needs to be humble. We saw him calling Gabby Jesus, the man who he replaced at Manchester City, a clown on the pitch. You see Ben White kind of going over being like, what did you just say to him? You know, and Arteta dragging people away. Suddenly, the dynamic of this rivalry has changed. And I agree with you. Between Arteta and Guardiola, there is always going to be that element of respect. And so there should be, right? And I think that that level can stay there. I think there was a healthy level of respect between Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. And I don't think that takes away from their kind of battle and their rivalry that they had over the last 5-6 years before this one. But I do think that that being something, and you're seeing the physicality on show, seeing that kind of no one wants to give an inch, was the moment that this maybe changed in terms of where the public perception of it was?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the fact that Arsenal are desperately trying to take that crown away from them as well is becoming more desperate with each season. They've been so close, right? They've come so far in relatively short space of time to get this close to Manchester City from where Arsenal were when Arteta first came in, and even in the first beginnings of Arteta's reign at Arsenal. They've come a long, long way. And not only that, we've seen, you know, City players become part of the Arsenal setup. Zinchenko, Gabby Jesus, Raheem Sterling, like they're all...
Nicolas Jova, maybe more important than anyone.
Yeah. And of course, Arteta's there too. The fact him and Guardiola are actual friends, as I say, like it does make this pretty difficult. But both these teams are desperate to seek that edge over one another. And I think that that's what boiled over here. I think that early moment between Havertz and Rodri was such a tone setter for the game. And I don't think it necessarily helped Arsenal in the early stages because Man City were brilliant. As I say, we talked about this on Patreon the other day where we dissect the game properly, but it did set the tone for a remarkable game in terms of how emotional it was and what it meant to everyone. From that moment, even me sat here on a couch in San Diego, my heart rate was up, right, from that first kick. So I can't imagine what the adrenaline was like among those two groups of players as they started to go at each other, as they started to tackle each other, challenge each other. And you start to see the two sides of player personalities as well. And let's take Haaland as an example, right? So he scores the goal that puts Man City 1-0 up. He takes it in his stride. He finishes it. It gives the old 1-0 signal to the fans. He's like, yeah, we're Man City. This is what we do. This is what I do. You can't lock me up, Gabriel and Saliba. And you're like, oh my God, the guy's a machine. He's got his 100th goal, blah, blah, blah. And then by the end of the game, you're seeing not the goal monster Haaland. You're seeing the wind-up merchant Haaland, who, as we say, picks the ball up at the net. Gabriel's got his shirt over his head, doesn't know what's going on. Haaland throws the ball at his head. Gabriel takes his shirt off his head, looks around, has no idea what's just happened, so just kind of carries on. But now, will he be even more rattled by what's just happened? So the next time these two go head to head, Gabriel's going to leave one on him, mate. There's no way that doesn't happen. And that's what you kind of want. When these two go head to head again, you want this to be lingering. You want the ill feeling to still be there. You want them to be a point or two apart in the league and challenging one another. And you really want these two as much as possible to be at full strength any time that they meet. The fact that Rodri went out the game took a little bit off of it because we had to see a different kind of match. But, you know, even in the wake of it, the way that they're talking about each other, City players are saying, you know, dirty Arsenal and things like this and taunting them because they haven't won any proper trophies and this kind of stuff. I'm sorry, but I just love it. And this is where proper rivalries are built. And after the preconditioning that we've seen from Arsenal over the past couple of seasons as they got closer and closer, this feels like it. We came into this season saying, we both predicted Arsenal to win the league. Now, I've kind of already come back from that a little bit, but this was a match that they could easily have won. They probably should have held out in the end. And if they had, you'd be saying, wow, maybe they are going to win the league. But yeah, it's starting to boil over, mate. And that's when you know you've got a rivalry in your hands.
Well, I find this really interesting, right? Because I've seen this from fans of both sides on social media, and I'm quite intrigued by how it's kind of playing out. We're seeing Arsenal fans, you know, talking about it and being like, we got them rattled. We've got in City's heads. That's how we know that they respect us now, etc. And City fans saying, yeah, all right, that's fine. And there's a lot of City players coming out and speaking to the press. And I'm going to talk about what Bernardo Silva said afterwards. But more than that, I think we saw this a lot when City and Liverpool was kind of at its height, right? There was a lot of talk from players. And it's almost like when City feel like they're under threat from another team, they kind of employ this strange, and it's not a bad thing, just sort of different psychological battle in that players all start coming out and speaking. There's loads of them, loads of players from City. And I wonder if this is on Pep's kind of instructions to be like, go on then, go out and say what you think. And, you know, let's let the media kind of circus, entorno, as they call it in Barcelona, take things away. Let's take them, let them spiral it out of control, because we know that we are good at handling like drama and not panic, that's the wrong word, but like, you know, we've seen City go and win 17 games straight at the end of a season to win the title. How many times have we seen City force their way over the line when people are like, well, they have to drop points at some point, and then they just don't? So I wonder if there is an element with City where when they do feel like a side is coming up against them and that are a serious threat, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think that anyone at City doesn't see Arsenal as a serious threat right now. And if they do, then that's wild. Yeah. But I do think you're kind of looking at this and going, ooh, they're now trying to stir up this kind of tornado. They want that psychological pressure heaped on, because they know and they've showed that they can deal with it. And they kind of, I wonder if part of it is going, well, we don't know if Arsenal can. Maybe they can, right? But City know that they are good at that. And therefore, whipping that into a frenzy often comes out and helps them. We've seen it before. So I don't think this is a kind of, you know, from an Arsenal perspective, them saying, oh, we're in City's heads. I don't think that's changed, right? I don't think that this game has necessarily changed the idea that City will see Arsenal as a credible threat. Because if they weren't looking at that already after the last two seasons, then they're mad. But I do think that there is a level of being like, oh, okay. So if you're going to be like that and you're going to play like that and you want it nasty and you want it on field and you want it physical, then we're going to start to play, you know, ramp up the psychological games as well. And I'm intrigued by where that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Where can it go? How deep can this go? And that's Arsenal's challenge, really, to kind of keep this going. Because Man City, we know, are going to be relentless. We know that their squad is deep enough. We know that Guardiola's got the nous and the tools and the backing and all of these things. Arsenal are the ones that have to keep up the pressure and keep their head straight. My long-term concern over Arteta ever winning an Arsenal title is, can he stay emotionally stable enough? And actually, I thought, you know, his head must have been exploding in this game, because he must have had so much that he wanted to say and do on that touchline. But it's Pep. He's got to hold himself back. That's not always going to be the case, right? And you have to sometimes let it run away with you. And we'll talk about the other rivalries that we've seen in the past. But at some point, he's going to have to let it all go. And I think we might even see a more explosive game the next time that these two teams meet each other.
Well, maybe we'll get given a Carabao Cup quarterfinal or something to really kind of really ramp it up into the gap. Oh, look, I mean, I just wanted to talk about Bernardo Silva's comments, because I think it takes us on quite nicely to the next thing we're going to discuss, which is that City-Liverpool rivalry that we've seen over the last couple of years between Pep and Klopp's sides. But I was watching this interview and, you know, he was talking to ESPN. They were asking what the difference was between, you know, the Liverpool games and these Arsenal games. And Bernardo said, the difference, I don't know, maybe that Liverpool have already won a Premier League, Arsenal haven't. The Liverpool have won a Champions League, Arsenal haven't. Liverpool always faced us face to face to try and win the games. From this perspective, the games against Arsenal haven't been like the ones we've had against Liverpool. He also was like, there's only one team that came to play football. The other came to play to the limits of what was possible to do in a allowed by the referee. Like, we're not happy as we wanted 3 points, but I'm happy with the game we played. I'm glad we always enter the pitch to try and win every match. Now, this is, you know, in some ways it's a little bit by the by, right? Because one, how else are anyone going to play with a 2-1 lead against City with 10 men? And like, I don't care if you're Arsenal or you're Burnley or you're Fulham or whatever. If you are 2-1 up with 10 men, you're going to try and limit City's attacking opportunities. No one is going to be like, yeah, cool. Ange might actually, you know, respect, but Ange Postecoglou might. But most teams are going to come in and be like, yep, we're going to dig in here and try and grind out this result. And we know that Arsenal are good at that. And so City talking about Arsenal's dark arts, etc., when they were the masters of the tactical foul, you know, we spoke about it, and I spoke about it with glowing praise in the time at times that City were so good at that, at managing games, at being able to run down clocks, at being able to just make sure that the opposition didn't feel like they could get any momentum going. This is a massive compliment, as far as I'm concerned, to Arsenal, that City are talking about things like dark arts when they were the ones that employed those most of all.
Yeah, and Bernardo Silva's words do make sense, because Arsenal do have to show that they can genuinely win things before they can be considered to be a team on City's level. But City were once that team as well. City had to earn their place on this stage. They had loads of money once upon a time. They were having to buy a team once upon a time. And I can remember thinking, nah, City are never going to be the real deal. They'll never quite make it.
Noisy neighbours. And
yeah, and here we are. They made it. But you have to earn your place on that stage. Arsenal are definitely starting to get there. You look at a game like the weekend and they're this close to being there. When they pip them to a title, that's when they're there. And that is the moment when City will truly be rattled and Haaland and maybe even Pep do start to lose it with Arteta and gang.
Yeah, well, we will see. Well, maybe Arsenal need their Aguero moment. And obviously they have historical titles in the Premier League era, but it's been a while, right? So I think that whilst, you know, Arsenal fans will be listening to this being like, what do you mean we haven't won any titles? We have won titles, not in this era with this group of players, right? So I think all of that matters.
Too far gone. It's
yeah,
too far
I think
gone.
It's a different thing to what kind of Bernardo Silva is speaking about. But look, he talked about that Liverpool rivalry after the break. That's the next era-defining rivalry in the Premier League that we're going to be going into. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. We're talking era-defining rivalries in the Premier League, and it takes us nicely onto the rivalry between Manchester City and Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp versus Pep Guardiola. It was a rivalry that Jamie Carragher famously referred to, Dean, as the best the Premier League has ever seen, at which point Gary Neville completely and utterly lost his head and basically said that it was disrespectful for Carragher to be talking like this. Now, you can argue that from both sides, and I'm not really here to argue it, but I do think that in terms of the football played and these two teams going at each other, the quality level as high as almost anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, and I think what gives it an edge is that they were both so significant on the European stage at the same time and at least threatening on the European stage at that time as well as like the top teams on the whole continent, which when we go through other rivalries in the Premier League era, that didn't usually happen. I don't know if it ever happened, in fact, that you had two teams at this level. I think it helped that Pep and Klopp had history from being in a Bundesliga together and kind of rattling each other a little bit before they even had their duels in the Premier League. Of course, when Pep first arrived, he first and foremost had to establish City as the actual force that they were going to be. But this then just built into a rivalry. And of course, there were other great managers in the Premier League at the time. And there's always the potential for Mourinho to get involved and all these sorts of things. But these two just ran away with it because they produced sides that were era-defining for the Premier League. Like, it was a level of brilliant consistency, pretty much unlike anything we've seen in footballing terms. Sometimes they cancelled each other out tactically. Sometimes they would overthink things and the battle we thought we were going to have didn't open up. But wow, when it went off, it went off. And they really did dislike each other at times. And I think when you look back at it and when you read now and they talk about each other, you know, Pep and Klopp will admit they used each other to take their teams to new levels. And that's what was probably so great about it. There was always a level of respect. They know how good one another are. But that still doesn't mean that they would be friends on the touchline. And that's probably what helped the rivalry grow. They made sure that their teams matched their personalities on those big match days. And that line that is hard to find. And I think obviously we saw probably Arsenal slightly overtrade it with getting a red card. And no, it's a harsh red card, but the fact that that game boils over a couple of times in the wrong way for them is probably a case of game management that you have to try to control. But these two managed to somehow do it and just go blow for blow for blow for blow. And by the time Klopp bowed out, I felt like we still had unfinished business. We weren't ready for that. It came too soon. Like, we thought we at least had one more year of Pep v Klopp. And I still feel like that's been taken away from us. But when Bernardo Silva talks about the Liverpool rivalry and that he would still consider them to be their main rivals, but it's different now. that's not going to be the same that game anymore because it's Arne Slot. He hasn't been part of it. He hasn't understood it. It's not the same. And that's why that Arsenal City rivalry does become the new one now, because there's already predetermined tension from the past couple of seasons. It is the one that's been bubbling and can blow up. I'm not saying that we're not going to see a Liverpool-Man City game that isn't feisty. I'm not saying that can't exist, but it's not, can't be a rivalry straight away under a new manager, I don't think.
Well, it's interesting you say that because kind of I was trying to work out when I kind of determined this rivalry kind of beginning. And look, I think that there, between the eras of, what, 2018 and 2022, you would say that this was the defining rivalry in the Premier League. But actually, the kind of first echelons of it, if you will, were back in 2014, right? When they actually did come first and second in the league. And there was that game between the two where Philip Coutinho scored that winner and Liverpool went clear. And then obviously we all know what happened next, right? And we all know about the slip and we all know about Crystal Palace and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that was the first kind of sign that, ooh, are Liverpool and City sort of coming to life here? Because City was still in their own ascendancy at that point. They hadn't established the dominance that we kind of know now to be. But it really does feel like it's that moment in 2018. They start in this title race. You know, it's 2017-18. I think they meet in the Champions League quarterfinals, I'm going to say. And it feels absolutely massive. And Liverpool didn't come in the top three that season, right? It was United that came second behind Manchester City. But it did feel like that Champions League quarterfinal reignited, if you will, something between the two sides. And obviously Liverpool went on to become finalists. They lost that final, fine. But, you know, from 18-19 onwards, you then go, okay, Liverpool come second in 2018-19. They win it in 2019-20 ahead of City. City win it in 2020-2021. And Liverpool actually end up coming third that year. But they're back in second in 2021-22. And those title races and how tight they were probably don't do quite justice to quite how, you know, the margins were so, so fine in this. And also you kind of then take into account the fact that Liverpool went and won the Champions League in 2018-19 when City were absolutely desperate, or at least at the very least, the top brass at Manchester City were absolutely desperate to be top kings of Europe. And that year, obviously, Man City win the league. And I remember discussing it at the time and saying, do you think they'd swap? Do you think if you offered them both the opportunity to swap trophies, would they take it? And my kind of conclusion was yes. I think that Liverpool was so desperate to be back on top domestically. They'd already had European success. And instead, you know, City go and win the league. And it's obviously a big moment, but Liverpool go and win in Europe. And that's a huge moment for them. And I do remember thinking, wow, we've got one team here who's dominant in the Premier League, but have had a really tight race. We've got another team there who have gone and won things in Europe. These two are so far ahead of everybody else at that point, it felt. And look, that obviously doesn't always play out. And I'm not trying to talk really outside of the Premier League here. And we know how good Real Madrid were in that spell. And I'm not trying to take away from their achievements at all. But in terms of what you're looking at from a kind of domestic perspective, seeing them both in that kind of category and taking major trophies on the major stages felt like the beginning of something. And then we saw that explode into two of the best title races we've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as I mentioned at the top, to have two teams at this level go head to head in a big Champions League match is different. And it kind of separates this rivalry from others that we've seen a lot of the time throughout Premier League eras. You know, I'd have loved to have seen a Champions League final between, you know, Wenger's Arsenal and Ferguson's United or something, you know, but you got them domestically, you got those big clashes, but this one felt really special and significant. Obviously, City building towards the model that we're still seeing now, but Liverpool combating them with a different style of football. You know, Jurgen Klopp coming in with his rock and roll style football. City building up play with this, well, a style of short passing football that is unlike anything we'd ever seen in the Premier League, and also so tactically diverse that players don't even have positions anymore. But they kind of introduce these concepts and then kind of steal them off of each other as well and introduce them to their own players. They try to predict what the other will do. And so, yeah, you might have Trent and Robertson, but watch me play John Stones in defensive midfield. You're not expecting that one, are you? And they try to just get these little tactical intricacies over each other. So while, yes, at the top level, you could be a tabloid reporter who just wants a fight and you want a last minute goal that decides it, you could always take this game to a deeper level where these managers were truly tested and could rattle each other on another level by just outdoing each other with one slight tactical tweet that completely blew apart the other team's game plan. And that's why I think that this was also era defining, because on a footballing level, it was extraordinary the way that they would play.
It also rolled over into the fans, though, right? Like, obviously, Liverpool have major rivalries with Manchester United. We know about that derby and we know about what that kind of represents. And of course, the Merseyside derby with Everton. This kind of escalated into a game that felt as, I mean, not as big as those to the people of Liverpool. I'm not suggesting that's the same. And Manchester City obviously have a massive cross-city rivalry with United that we're going to talk about a little bit more in a minute. But yeah. I think that this kind of escalated into the game of the season, right? And, you know, I've heard people describe this, you know, on various occasions as sort of the English Clasico for the last few years. And look, whether you agree with that or not, it's kind of by the by. But there is that kind of sense that obviously it spilled over onto the terraces, it spilled over into the streets at times. And whilst that's not, you know, a good thing, I'm not sitting here and being like, yeah, we should all promote that. I think it shows the intensity of where the feeling had got to between the two sides. And also, you know, the kind of differentiation in what the two sides were, because I think, you know, obviously City have come up, you know, from the third division. They know what it's like to be down there. And yes, there is a new generation of Manchester City fans that probably doesn't kind of experience that on the same level. There is also a hardcore that were there in those dark times and were there at Main Road and all of that, who kind of really take the kind of Liverpool element of being like, oh, you've just bought your success. And they're like, hang on, we've been here and we've paid for it. You know, through those years in the lower divisions, you've never had that. You know, you've never been there in those kind of times. And because the last time Liverpool were really struggling in the lower leagues is probably before your average match-going fan's, you know, lifetime at this point. So it kind of elevated to this sort of thing where it was a bit tit for tat, but also there was this kind of ideological element between the two of them where Liverpool fans were like, well, obviously we can see what you've done here. We know what Sheikh Mansour has done for Manchester City. You've bought the success, etc. Same, you know, accusations that have been leveled at a number of clubs down the years, and that's fine. But I think that there was a kind of hardcore fan base within the Man City fan base that were probably like, hang on, no, you don't understand where we've been, where we've come from. We were there watching us kind of overcome, you know, games on penalties to actually get out of Division Two. We were there on those terraces, and you know, you see the City stripes that they're wearing this year. That's the Paul Dickov final, right? Where they ended up promoted. Yeah. All of this is history and that's in recent and living memory that they can kind of fire back with and be like, well, hang on, no, you can't throw that at me because I was there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, look, I remember being at Bleacher Report and doing some jobs in the same season, one at Man City, one at Liverpool. And I can clearly remember actually that being in separate taxi rides in both cities, talking to one cab driver from who's a City fan, talking to a cab driver who's a Liverpool fan, and spending the entire journey with them talking about how much they disliked from Liverpool's end City, from City's end Liverpool, and like talking about all the reasons they didn't feel that they were worthy of where they were in that moment. Neither of them were willing to kind of quite give them that level of respect, even though they both earned it, obviously, throughout that duration of time. But they both just didn't like the fact that they'd managed to get to where they were in that moment. And that's what added that extra spice.
But also, you know, the reason that there is a massive rivalry between United and Liverpool in the first place is because the two cities have, a famously old rivalry that goes all the way back to shipping lanes and canals and all of those things that were about trade. It just so happened that United happened to be the side that were challenging Liverpool in the ascendancy when these things really kicked off. So it doesn't take away from the Manchester-Liverpool rivalry, which still very much exists, but it was just kind of on a different plane. But I think the other thing about that rivalry, and it takes us on, is that it felt like such a big thing, I think, because prior to that, it felt like the Premier League didn't really have one. And there's sort of 3-4 years here before 2017-18, start of 2018, really, where Liverpool really started to find their rhythm, where obviously Chelsea won the title under Conte in 16-17. They beat Tottenham to the title. Leicester obviously famously won it in 15-16, and Arsenal and Tottenham came second and third. Chelsea won it under Mourinho, you know, his return in 2014-15. And you're kind of like, well, was there a Chelsea City rivalry? A little bit, but nothing that would kind of dominate the headlines. You really have to go back, I think, to that era between 2011, should we say, and maybe 2014, where it was kind of a battle for dominance in Manchester that really took the headlines. And that in itself was enough of a spectacle. And obviously we've already mentioned the Aguero moment in 2012 that took the title to City for the first time. And they pipped United on the day, and they'd all been all the noisy neighbours stuff and all of that kind of like, oh my God, are these lads actually coming for our throne? Is there actually a cross-city rivalry going on here? What are the kind of defining moments of this? And I find it incredibly interesting because you read some of, you know, the things that were, you know, written by that time, and you read what happened in terms of Sir Alex Ferguson and what that kind of was. It was really interesting. And he wrote in his autobiography, right? The danger no longer emanated from London or Merseyside. It was so close you could smell it. An owner with the means to make this a serious municipal contest stood between us and control of the city. And I think that's such a wonderful line because it's one of those things that you're like, oh, that really did kind of rise, not from nowhere, but it rose really quick. And there were some massive games. You know, you remember the 6-1 at Old Trafford. And yes, okay, maybe that score was a bit embellished towards the end of things. There was late goals in that. But that moment in 2011 was like, oh, the power's changed. And that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, the City Chelsea rivalry was about money, basically. The clash of the cash,
El Clasico.
There you go. Like that's how all those games are always built. It was always about, oh, City has spent this much money, Chelsea has spent this much money. This is what their squads are worth, and then occasionally you might get a flashpoint, but it really wasn't that much of a proper rivalry that we'd get excited about. Whereas the Manchester Derby did become a rivalry. It was a proper local rivalry that actually took on national and global relevance, really. It was money that created the rivalry, of course. Like City could never have got there otherwise. But it was the turning point when they went from noisy neighbours to proving they could be more than that. Look, I didn't expect City to ever get to the level that they did. I honestly didn't. Like, this is a period of time when you were really expecting that Man United would continue to be dominant. You really did not have any historical precedence for a team being able to assert themselves on an area like Manchester and not only win that rivalry, but also then blow them out of the water. Sir Alex Ferguson felt that too, you know. He was asked, I remember, whether he ever felt that City could become the dominant team. And I think he said, not in my lifetime. Well, he's still alive now. And I think it's happened. Obviously, the Tevez moment was a massive turning point in this rivalry and also in City's rise. Suddenly, the welcome to Manchester posters go up after Tevez switches the red side of Manchester for the blue.
But also that's a trope, right? And you used to see this quite a lot of times in that City players would come along and be like, yeah, this is the club of the city. And I think Manchester United mostly just sort of looked at them and like, all right. But suddenly that changes, right? Because at this point, you know, that, I don't want to say inferiority complex, but you know, I think it stems from something like that. They've watched from the shadows as their bigger, noisier neighbours have won titles after titles after titles, have become one of the biggest clubs in the world, have fans from all over the place. And what City clung onto was, well, we're a local team with a local fan base. And it's interesting watching that change as this kind of escalates into something more than just a municipal city rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely. And it becomes very fiercely contested because City do become a very good team. There are moments where, you know, like the Rooney overhead kick is symbolic of kind of this period, I guess, when the games were so closely fought but it was taking moments of greatness to decide them. And yeah, I think United always felt that City just wouldn't manage to quite close the gap. But as time goes on, we move forwards. And United had always kind of held themselves over City because they hadn't won a trophy for however many years it was at one point. I think they had a banner up saying 35 years or something like that City hadn't won a trophy for. And
you had to take that down quite quickly.
Well, yeah, suddenly City kind of win the FA Cup in 2011. And you're like, okay, well, they've won a cup, fair enough. Like they've won a cup and they're making their mark. But it was that first Premier League title, obviously, that really changes things. The Aguero moment in 2012 changes things. Now, that's a huge, significant moment. But in that moment, you know, they didn't manage to retain the title. You know, Ferguson clawed it back for one last time and he won the league in his last season at Man United. And it was his last kind of throw at being like, you are not having this all your way. You're not doing this to us. We're Man United. We rule this city. We rule this league. But the two, do you see them going head to head for a title anytime soon? Like, it's still difficult to see United trying to claw their way back. But this rivalry still exists on some level, but it's very much a local level now, because even when Man United beat Man City in the FA Cup final last season, City have kind of like, you're not better than us.
It's a
one-off win.
It's a complete reversal of where it was, right? And this is the thing, it goes back to, were there title races between the two? Well, United came second in 2017-18 and they came second in 2020-2021, but no one looks at those and go, yeah, great title races, right? Yeah. No one looked, they were strolls for City. And so therefore that difference is that, you know, that you can finish second, but until you're actually in a race with each other, and it really feels like the last time that happened was, you know, that title in 2012-13, as you say, the Sir Alex Ferguson last title that kind of set the bar up for that. And City went and won it straight back the season after. So it's an interesting one. But I mean, it takes us out of City territory, right? We've talked about them now, and that is really it. We've talked about era-defining rivalries, including Manchester City, from sort of, you know, all the way from 2011 through to the present day. And before that, you kind of then you have to look back into, and we are now moving down into memory lane, because actually, there's an interesting bit here between 2004 and, you know, 2010, 2011. You're looking at it and going, well, the defining rivalry in the Premier League was Chelsea against Manchester United. And in that era, Chelsea win it three times, United win it four times. And you're kind of looking at that and going, okay, that's cool. And that's an interesting thing to play with. And it's the Mourinho and Ferguson kind of era. Ancelotti takes over, obviously, a little bit later and wins a title for Chelsea as well. But it felt like Mourinho and Ferguson. Equally, at the same time, it felt quite a lot like Mourinho and Wenger were going at each other. And on top of all of that, the actual one that stands out now, and it's not a Premier League thing, but between 2005 and 2009, I think Chelsea and Liverpool played each other 23 times, including massive, massive games for both in Europe. And actually, that feels like it's something pretty massive in terms of the scope of this era as well. So this is the first kind of era that we get to where it really feels like there's lots of different things going on at the same time.
True Barclays, mate. This was true Barclays era. And you say you've got two rivalries running almost side by side here.
Three, yeah.
But it's the United-Chelsea thing really did come along here. It's obviously on the back of Roman Abramovich buying Chelsea. I used to go to a lot of Man United games back during this time, and it was kind of expected to be a bit of a flash in the pan, because there was always this, maybe it was hope more than a genuine feeling, that Abramovich's money would prove to be basically illegal. They thought, you know, something's going to happen here. There's no way that you can throw this much money around. You know, they'd be in the stands throwing money. The Chelsea fans literally would print out £50 notes, fake £50 notes, and the away end would just be like, we've got loads of money, we've got loads of money, properly winding everyone up.
There is a sense here, and this is the second time you said it, the United fans seem to think, or United, you know, the kind of general context around it was like, nah, the money's here, go away. But it hasn't gone away.
It was the only way you could challenge them. Obviously, United's rise actually in the Premier League came through money. Not buying players. Well, initially it was obviously the class of 92, so they won that title. But then obviously you get through time and United are the team that buys the biggest players. But they get rattled suddenly because the way football is built changes, first with Chelsea, then with Manchester City. And obviously that's never going away now. Like, this is the way that football is run. And Man United have probably struggled to adapt to that, to be honest, because they didn't want to become a model in which they had joked about and mocked for two defining eras through the Premier League. But yeah, this was a rivalry really that obviously Mourinho comes in and they won the league pretty easily, actually, the first time Chelsea won the league. It was a bit of a stroll, as I
also
remember
that,
it.
That changed the face of it. And we'll come on to United Arsenal in a minute. But like, you know, Mourinho walks in and changes the game. It's, you know, it's fixed that this was sort of United Arsenal. There were these big things. There was the treble and the Invincibles and all of those things. And then Mourinho walks in and goes, I'm here now. And suddenly it's like, and it happens really early on, right? So the first game that Mourinho plays at Stamford Bridge is against Manchester United. And they win 1-0. Ardiger Johnson scores. I remember it really, really clearly. And you kind of look at that and be like, wow, that was a statement of intent. You've gone there and taken the dominant side of the Premier League era so far, and you've walked in your first game and beat them 1-0. You're like, wow, okay, right, something's happening here. And that, yeah, I think, was the kind of moment you're like, ooh, there's a new kid on the block.
But if you think too about what Mourinho did to mentality of those players in that dressing room, what he turned that team into, what they needed at that moment, John Terry obviously becomes the epitome of it. Like, he's the Mourinho on the pitch. But throughout that period, you've got Chelsea players that kind of just felt untouchable. And, you know, whoever it is that you go through on that Chelsea time, that whether it's Lampard, whether it's Drogba, whatever sticks out, they became something special. United always felt they would win the war. Chelsea might win the odd battle. I can remember, like, United fans used to sing, Mourinho, are you listening? You better keep our trophy glistening. We'll be back in May to take it away. That was always the case. They were like, okay, you've beaten us to a title. We're getting it back. You're never going to win this enough times. We will always be here.
Yeah.
And
but there was that change, right, from Chelsea being a cup team, because obviously they win the 1997 FA Cup, they win the 2000 FA Cup, they won the Cup Winners' Cup. And there was that sense that Chelsea could win things, but they were never kind of consistent enough to challenge at the top of the Premier League. And that's almost changed overnight.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, go to head-to-head in the Champions League final, and talked earlier on about Liverpool and City's rivalry making it to the European stage. Well, we did actually get a final between these two teams that obviously ends up going to penalties. John Terry slips, Man United win the penalty shootout. I didn't like the way that's how that game was decided. It was obviously a tough night because the conditions of the game were a bit crazy. It was a bit of a weird final, and I think it probably deserved to be a bit of a better final, if I'm totally honest. But I just love the fact as well that the players didn't like each other, like John Terry, Wayne Rooney. You know, Rooney's talked about the fact he would look to leave his studs on players. You know, it was like these were old school players playing in a reasonably modern time. The game was changing at this point to kind of what we're seeing now. It was early inclinations of the game changing, but both Mourinho and Fergie would make sure that old school, I guess, theories and practices remained in place. And this was also an endurance test. Who can outsee who? And it was wholehearted. It was committed. I'm not sure we'll ever see this style of football again. I don't think that's probably reasonable to expect given the way that the games move forward and the rules have changed. But it was obviously ignited further by the fact that the two managers just really didn't like each other. They just couldn't find any common ground.
I enjoy that they actually eventually did.
eventually they had to, but it was impossible to see that coming at this stage.
Yeah, 100%. But look, Mourinho was starting wars left, right and centre at this point, right? Because he'd obviously started a war of words with Arsene Wenger. Arsenal were starting to fade at this point. We'd already seen the kind of best of the Wenger era, I think. But also with with Benitez, right? Because Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho had completely opposite styles of what they wanted, what they thought life was about, what they thought football was about.
Yeah.
And them two meeting in Europe so regularly added this kind of third dynamic that wasn't really present as much in the Premier League, but also did feel like it was kind of crucial to the way that everything was perceived in the Premier League, despite the fact it wasn't necessarily face to face in that regard. So,
yeah.
I mean, look, that was Mourinho at his absolute antagonistic best, right?
Yeah, and I mean, what you see now from Mourinho is just a shadow of what
he once
was.
It's a watered down version, yeah.
It really is, you know.
I don't care if he storms out of the stadium at Galatasaray Fenerbahce, like, you know.
Exactly, I was just going to say, as you might see footage of him right now on Instagram or TikTok of a journalist, like, trying to show him footage of the phone, calling him the crying one, like, you've got it. Those days are gone. Mourinho's not interested in all that anymore. He was hard to address over those issues at the best of times. Look, I obviously was a journalist during these periods, and I spent a lot of time with Jose Mourinho at Chelsea, and I was in a lot of the press conferences throughout, you know, these eras that we're talking about. And, you know, it was a strange old time. It really was. And you had to be very careful about how you would word things. I mean, with Mourinho in particular, it was very much a case of, he did respect seniority. And when we were face to face with him, I was working for a Sunday newspaper. And I remember, like, even if I had a really good question or I had a really good idea for a story that could work out, there were on the Sunday beat at the time, there were a couple of journalists who were in their like 60s who I knew would get a better answer at Mourinho. Mourinho was never interested in speaking to me, to be quite honest. Like, he knew who I was, but didn't care who I was. Like, he knew who I worked for, but it was kind of by the by. But there was always this thing with Mourinho whereby seniority kind of mattered. And there was a couple of the older guys, yeah, that could get a smile out of him. And often, like, they would just, there was a weak side to him. A weak side, probably wrong, but there was a personable side to Mourinho. There was. And Fergie was very, very hard to break down at this point, right? And it was still like, press conferences, occasionally I'd have to stand in for our Manchester guy and go into a Fergie press conference. And no, like, I was pretty young at the time, but I'd be pretty scared to ask a question, to be honest, because he didn't know who I was. He also didn't care who I was. And just to word the question wrongly, like, the press conference was probably over. He'd probably just end it. Be like, who's that? Like, I'm done. And he didn't really, I don't think, have that same respect for seniority. He knew them all. He'd been around it all so long, and he was just getting on with his job. Whereas Mourinho, he would look to entertain a bit too. Like, that you would have this menace, you'd have this monster. But sometimes, I promise you, we'd sit down with him and it would turn into this 20 minutes of storytelling from Mourinho. And it was a great insight into who he really was, kind of like the family mind, the guy that probably was mentored by Bobby Robson in those early years.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he didn't see much of it when it came to this rivalry.
Absolutely not. All right, we're going to end part two there. And after the break, I'm going to have to lean a little bit more into Dean as we go back to the earlier rivalries of the Premier League, including that massive one between Arsenal and Manchester United. Stick with us. Welcome back. Part three of Ranks FC, talking about era-defining rivalries in the Premier League. And we've got to our own sort of story time at this point. We're going back now, Dean, to what many people, including Gary Neville, as aforementioned, feel was the defining rivalry of the Premier League. 1997 to 2004, you would say. Manchester United and Arsenal brought about some massive, massive, significant moments. The Invincibles, obviously the 1999 treble for Manchester United, some amazing games, the Battle of Old Trafford, all sorts went on in this era. This is the one that people look to, I think, when they look at, you know, we're talking about Barclays and talking about those nostalgic moments and crying out for. We spoke about why this felt a little bit like this with the City Arsenal game this weekend, but this was the original in many ways.
I think, honestly, it's the period of time in which the Premier League became the runaway league in Europe. I think that this was the rivalry that ignited the Premier League becoming the force that it actually is today. Ferguson and Wenger were always in a war of words. They couldn't stand each other, to be quite frank. Arsene Wenger arrived in English football from Japan Nobody knew who he was. Like, you couldn't just quickly Google it. You couldn't go and watch a YouTube video about him. You didn't know who he was.
You're telling me you hadn't looked up much into Nagoya Grampus 8?
Like, I remember the Grampus 8 stuff at the time, and like newspapers like sending reporters out there, you know, desperately trying to discover who he was. Why has this guy got the job? Like, there's no chance this is going to work out. In the end, I think that probably worked in Wenger's favour, because he almost had nothing to lose, because he had literally no respect coming into the job. Ferguson did not know who he was. He has admitted he didn't know who he was. But Wenger did manage to rattle him pretty quickly, and Ferguson struggled to understand and respect that. He was like, I don't know what this guy's problem is. Why, this guy has a problem with Man United. I don't know what it is, but he's constantly talking about me and talking about this team. And we're going to have an issue if this carries on. It carried on for years and years. Look, it was fun. Like, for 6 or 7 seasons, these two properly went at each other. Maybe only had 3 proper title races, but obviously they had moments too, like the 1999 FA Cup semi-final. We've also saw Pizzagate, games like that. Pizzagate, the Battle of the Buffet, whatever you want to call it, which turned out to be probably the most furious game of football we've ever seen. For those that don't know what I'm talking about, there was a clash between these two teams. It was as Arsenal were in their kind of invincible stage, and there's this famous moment, which you definitely would have seen if you've watched anything on Premier League years, is Ruud van Nistelrooy hits the crossbar. At the time, he's considered to be a diver anyway. You know, Arsenal have zero respect for Ruud van Nistelrooy. Wins the penalty, it hits the crossbar. Martin Keown and Ray Parlour and others all jumping all into him, sticking their chests into him. It all kicks off. And long story short, it carries on into the tunnel afterwards. Alex Ferguson gets hit in the face by a slice of pizza, which transpires was thrown by Cesc Fabregas. It was about 17 at the time. Like,
I just always wondered why there was pizza in the tunnel. That was the thing that I
players
just...
still do it, mate. Like, players will still eat pizza straight after a game. Like,
yeah,
it's,
that's because, fine. But like, why was it in the tunnel, not in the dressing room?
He's brought it straight out the dressing room. Fabregas was in the dressing room.
All right.
He's got a slice of pizza in his hand. He's come back out because he can hear it all kicking off. And kind of hails this piece of pizza. It's Sir Alex Ferguson, which obviously has kind of gone down in history as one of those moments. But obviously a period of time in which Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira absolutely hated each other. And that was brilliant. They would kick each other. They would go into 50-50s. They would have their heads in each other's faces. They would have their hands in each other's faces. But both were brilliant footballers that were in the engine room, the midfield, literally running the game. They were extremely physical and hard, but they were also brilliant on the ball. There was actually a moment the other day when on NBC out here when Micah Richards tries to get Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane to talk to each other. Vieira was in Chicago, Keane was in the studio, and they just couldn't. Like, they just couldn't do it. They just can't give up any ground to one another. Like, that, it's hard to get out of each other's head. Of course, there'll be a level of respect, but Keane certainly doesn't want to really show it. But yeah, again, like, this was a period, Jack, where I was covering Arsenal really closely. So I would have been right at the beginning of my journalism career, but I was thrown in the deep end. And I would be in Wenger's press conference every single week. Wasn't always easy, especially like, because I was so young and you're dealing with like senior journalists who, a lot of them still on the beat and a lot of them kind of making their way. And also knew Wenger. But yeah, from kind of like 2002, I guess, I was really involved in covering Arsenal. And quite often I'd have Wenger like one-on-ones and stuff. And I can remember one time in particular, like, he hated it when Ferguson was like doing something good, basically. If United were on the verge of doing something good, like, he'd find it very difficult to talk about. And there was one pre-season game, must have been like 2003. I was at an Arsenal pre-season game. I was working for Sky Sports at the time, doing some video interview. And had to get Wenger after the game, and he wasn't doing any interviews, and I managed to grab him and asked a couple of questions on the pre-season game. But Man United were on the verge of signing Ronaldinho, and the move, it would just be in breaking that it looked like they got him. It looked like the deal was done. Ronaldinho was joining Man United. And so I said to Wenger, and just breaking today is the news that Ronaldinho is arriving at Man United. Like, the deal is almost done. It's some people saying it is done. How does that change this competition between you? And he was just like, is it done? I said, well, it sounds like it's pretty much done. Is it done? Is it done? And I was like, it hasn't signed yet. He won't sign. He won't sign for Man United. And I was like, this is quite bold. And I'm like, trying to get some more out of him, trying to get him to talk about Ronaldinho. What would it mean if Ronaldinho came into the Premier League? And obviously it didn't happen. And probably quite a good soundbite to go back on now, because he was just like, it was almost like he'd spoken to Ronaldinho and told him, just make sure you don't join them, go and join Barcelona instead, which he did go and do. But ultimately, yeah, you'd get these moments with Wenger, particularly around the Man United game. And he'd do his main press conference, and then you'd get a separate huddle for the newspapers, and we'd get around. Oh, mate, he could get so rattled by anything Ferguson had said. So we would find out, like, quite often Ferguson would have done his presser just before, and you'd kind of hope that had happened. And you'd get the reporter who's been in the Man United press conference to let you know what's gone on, and just drop something in there that might just, because if it's like an instant reaction. Wenger was very good in those moments because he couldn't hold back. He could not hold back. If Ferguson had antagonized him or disrespected his team, he wasn't taking it. And there were some times when you'd get inside Wenger's head and he would just explode. And yeah, I kind of miss those days. I saw an interview with Wenger the other day talking. He was like a part of his being inducted into the Hall of Fame and stuff, and talking about his career and looking back on it all. And even now, when you just hear his voice and stuff, it's like it just brings back memories of this period. It was just an incredible rivalry. Both teams were brilliant. Both managers were at their peak, and they were modernizing the game. The two sets of players, the two sets of fans hated each other. Oh, it's a brilliant time to be working in football, but it was an incredible time to be watching the Premier League grow into the monster it is today as well. Like, if we were to truly rank these eras that we're talking about, it's either this or the Klopp Guardiola one that is number one. And it would be for very different reasons for me. I'd probably say it was this Man United Arsenal era and the Wenger Ferguson spats that stand out most for me, and that I think truly, truly stand out as pure Premier League rivalry. But even if you put it second, like, there's no denying that this was up there with the greatest eras in football, even beyond the Premier League days.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, look, it's such a iconic kind of thing, right? And this is kind of where I bow out in terms of my, like, actual remembering it properly. Oh, yeah. This is the period that I'm sort of start to get a bit hazy on. It has to be through kind of watching the retro stuff and watching documentaries and reading books about it at this point that it changes. And there's a book by Rob Smith that's referenced in a Guardian article by Nick Miller. It's called "I'll See You Out There," which was a famous quote from Roy Keane, you know, during this era. And he was talking about, you know, why there was that antipathy between them. And it was like, Ferguson was rightly annoyed by the inference that he was a dinosaur compared to Wenger. And look, there was a lot of modernization that happened under Arsene Wenger, but that didn't mean that Ferguson had been left in the dust. But I think that there was that kind of sense of, like, oh, look at this, he's come in with his new ideas about nutrition.
He came in with science as well. He came in with science. That wasn't part of football. Like Wenger brought in that whole evolution. It was like, you know, this skinny French guy with glasses who's got these ideas about how eating can change the game, how nutrition is going to change the game, how the science around how we play this game is going to change. No, this is how we play football. But Ferguson quickly realised that Wenger was onto something.
Yeah. And also, we talk about ideological divides, right? And team, and often I talk about it in terms of fans, but this was kind of one of those, be like the new versus the old guard. And actually, kind of both teams won in some ways because the old guard adopted some of the philosophies of the new and then, you know, outlasted the lads who've come in and changed the game. And that in itself is a kind of a win for both.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's very difficult to replicate these eras. And that's the problem that clubs have at the end of era-defining periods. So obviously United have struggled ever since Ferguson bowed out. Arsenal took a long time to get back to where they are today. Arteta finally giving this club an identity again, but it's taken a whole period of misery to get back to where they are today. And
well, United are now going to do that as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that, but this is where it's kind of like a warning sign for Liverpool or for Man City when they have to change managers. When you come out of the Klopp era and you go into Arne Slot, when you, whether it's next year or the year after, come out of the Guardiola era, like things don't last forever. Football moves in cycles and very quickly you can end up falling away from it all. And that's why as a football fan, make the most of your periods of dominance. Like, don't take them for granted because they do disappear. It doesn't matter what the reasons are as to why it starts to fall away, whether it's just the manager leaving, whether it's that's combined with another team coming up the ladder, yeah, buying their way into the conversation, whatever it might be. But these rivalries are built and built. And then they fall away and the new kids stand in there waiting. So it'd be interesting as we talk about this. It's just reminding me that, you know, Liverpool need to kind of stay relevant right now because it's a difficult period to do that. It looks like they're going to. Like Arne Slot's made a good start, but it just reminds you, like, just keeping yourselves relevant and in a rivalry is very important.
Yeah, I mean, actually, talking of that, I've got an interview coming up on this channel in the next couple of weeks with Neil Atkinson of the Anfield Wrap, who's just written a book about the Jurgen Klopp era at Anfield, and going to be talking with him about, you know, moving on from Jurgen Klopp, as well as kind of reminiscing a little bit and seeing what that looks like. So keep an eye to the ground for that one coming soon here on Ranks FC. But let's just finish this off with a little nod to the era that happened before Arsene Wenger took over at Arsenal, because things are a little bit different. Obviously, Manchester United won the first season after the old First Division changed to the Premier League. The last team to win it before it became the Premier League were, of course, Leeds United. United then signed Eric Cantona off and went on an absolute tear. They won, you know, four of the next five in that area, sort of 92 to 97, before Arsenal's, you know, really started to come in and take things off them. But it was interesting watching back and looking back at that era because the challengers sort of floated. It was Aston Villa in 92, 93, and Norwich City, who came third, actually, who were in a three-way title race for much of that campaign. Norwich City side fired to the top of the table by Chris Sutton, of all people. But then, obviously, Sutton moved to Blackburn, where he was joined by Alan Shearer. Blackburn became this challenging force for Manchester United. They came second in 93, 94. They won it in 94, 95. But it does feel like the 95, 96, 96, 97 era was the first real managerial rivalry that kind of exploded in Sir Alex Ferguson and Kevin Keegan. Newcastle came second in 95-96 and 96-97. They started to rise up the placings at that point. 93-94, they came third. And that era is pretty special in terms of memories as well. But this one stands out for not just the bits on the pitch, and there were some incredible ones. And obviously United overhauling Newcastle United's lead at the top of the table and that famous rant by Kevin Keegan, you know, being like, I will love it if we beat them. It all kind of fails into this kind of early Premier League period where there was a couple. And, you know, again, we spoke about those eras where there was various rivalries going on at the same time. This one kind of felt three-way from sort of 93 to 97.
Yeah, I do remember it clearly. I was going to games at this point. Obviously, my dad's a United fan and I used to go to a lot of the games around this period. So I saw a lot of this firsthand. And yeah, United became the first Premier League champions. It was a big moment because they hadn't won the league for so long, 26 years. And it quickly it started to become clear that they weren't going to have things all their own way. And, you know, like we've seen with teams spending money, it's kind of how Blackburn started to challenge them. They were able to buy Alan Shearer.
Money, right? But
yeah, I mean, Jack Walker's money. So it was kind of like
local business magnate rather than a, you know, Gulf state. But
absolutely. But they bought Alan Shearer. They tried to get Roy Keane at the time. And they challenged him. They beat him to the title. But then they fell away and never been seen again, basically. And then Newcastle come onto the scene as the next challengers. It was much more of a rivalry, you're right. Ultimately, though, Newcastle were never able to win the league. So it was that's a bit strange, really. Blackburn did win the league and never really managed to strike up a proper rivalry. I mean, it did have a level to it because, obviously, Blackburn, Manchester...
local, right? That's a Lancashire derby local. At the very least.
Yeah, so like on a local level, like that would have been pretty fierce at the time. But even though Newcastle didn't win the league, they rattled United in a way that Blackburn just didn't, which is strange, isn't it? Newcastle were exciting. They were free scoring. They were involved in some unbelievable matches, like the 4-3s against Liverpool. They captured the imagination in a way that, to be honest, Blackburn couldn't. Blackburn did what they did. It was a bit more like a Leicester story than like a kind of one season wonder thing almost than anything that
truly
rattled
anyone. Yeah, they had two
really
good years, didn't they? I think they beat United at the end of the season before they won the league. They beat United in 1994.
There were some big moments.
And United went on and won it. But the stage was kind of set, right, for Blackburn to go and do it. And it wasn't their first time they'd won the top flight in English football, but it had been a long old time since Blackburn had been top of the pile. But again, you know, by 99, they were relegated. So it wasn't like one of those stories that had that kind of longevity in it that kind of lasted.
Yeah, I mean, the main annoyance, I think, was probably Shearer because United wanted him at the time, right? United wanted to side Alan Shearer around this period and were looking at him and he was quite annoying. But yeah, United obviously signed Andy Cole from Newcastle, which was kind of another layer to the rivalry that built up. But it was the Keegan rant that everyone's seen 1,000 times, I'm sure. He was just kind of disrespected by Ferguson, who just couldn't believe that he was going to be in a title race with this team. Keegan just didn't like the fact that Ferguson felt Newcastle turned up for some games and wouldn't turn up for other games. And Keegan was like, how dare you? How dare you say that about my team? And he, if you watch the famous interview, just gets more and more rattled and riled up until he's saying, I'll love it if we beat them. It was a big moment in the season. United still had to go and get something from their last game of the season to win the league. And ultimately, they do go and do it. But Newcastle had an opportunity and they kind of threw it away. And at the end of the day, Jack, like even though it was a rivalry and it was a pretty good one, it was a pretty fun one. United still not only won the league, but they shrugged them off and moved on. It was a 2-year rivalry and yeah. it was gone and dusted. And like it kind of lives on because it was fun and it was one of the first early moments of the Premier League Sky Sports partnership, which was an incredible marketing moment, right? Like to the vision of people to see the chance to capitalize on modern day football was right there, and they did it, and they rebranded and they pushed it into a new market and basically built it up for a few years and left everybody else for dead. And this was one of the big moments in that, this Keegan Ferguson spat, which, you know, I don't know how they both would feel about it now, but it was a lot of fun at the time.
But also, just kind of on that, I suppose this is really the first mark of the Premier League psychological warfare between managers, right? Up to that point, it all, you know, obviously managers had, you know, discussions and press conferences, but it would all been in the papers, right? That was where those kind of grievances were aired. And suddenly it was live on television. And you kind of see that moment, right, where Keegan kind of loses his head in that rant. And you're thinking, you know, obviously it's easy to say this with 2020 vision in hindsight. And I was, you know, approximately 6 months old when this was all going off. But you kind of look back at it now and you think, well, that might be the moment they lost the title, right? Because actually you could see, you know, the head explode, that kind of moment. And you takes us all the way back round to the top, right? At the top, you were discussing whether you thought Mikel Arteta had that ability to keep things tight and actually maintain his cool when he's in the heat of this title rivalry. Well, you watch Kevin Keegan now and you think, well, they probably lost it there. They probably lost it at that moment where he's completely lost his head. And, you know, at that point, it's all emotion. It's pure passion. And we should never take that out. I'm not suggesting we should. But yeah, it's probably that moment that you go, Ferguson goes, I've got him. And it's the first marker of that in the Premier League, really.
There's this game in 1996 between these two teams. And I remember watching it. Like, I can remember, like, my nan actually had Sky. I didn't have Sky at the time at home. And I remember my nan had got Sky, basically to make me happy, I think. And you'd get like one game a week or whatever it was at the time. And it was great. Those were the moments. But Newcastle played against Man United. And Newcastle beat Man United 5-0. There's a chip over Peter Schmeichel that you've probably seen. Les Ferdinand scores, Shearer scores, David Ginola scores. And it felt like a moment where you're like, oh my God, what? Newcastle have beaten Man United 5-0. This is a great Man United team. You've not only got Schmeichel, you've got Cantona, you've got David Beckham. You've got Gary Neville at the time. He was a very good right back at the time. You had this Nicky Butt, this team that had just been, kind of seemed like they were about to go, if anyone was going to go invincible in this period, it was like Man United were going to be dominant for years and years. That's kind of what it was starting to feel like.
Super Saiyan, right?
So yeah, when Newcastle suddenly beat them 5-0, you're like, what? And so that also added to the build up to all of that. And again, built up the rivalry. It was brilliant. It was a great period of time. A million miles away from what we see now. A million miles in terms of the football and the pitches and the coverage and how the players looked after themselves, obviously, and all of that kind of stuff. If you were to watch that 5-0 now, probably worth doing, actually. Watch the 5-0 and just see what the actual standard of the football was like compared to
there's some great goals, to be fair. There's some great goals,
but it's a very different game that you're watching.
Yeah, it's on Sky Sports Retro channel on YouTube if you want to go back and have a look at it, because it is a very, very enjoyable watch. But with that, DJ, I think we should probably call this to a close. This has been loads of fun. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. And just to take it full circle, I mean, we want to figure out where this Guardiola, Arteta, Man City, Arsenal rivalry is heading. And that's kind of what inspired this moment for us to go back through the Premier League years and just remind ourselves what it takes to ignite a great rivalry and is it a grudge match or is it a proper rivalry? And we think we've now got a rivalry in our hands, and we will see how these two continue to challenge each other and wind each other up throughout the course of this season and hopefully for the years to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, there's only a few things left for me to do. One of them is say a massive thank you to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Another is to say thank you so much for listening. And a third is to say, please tune in on Friday, where we're going to have a very different episode on The Truth. Sam and Doogie are discussing Zlatan Ibrahimovic and where he fits in the great pantheon of strikers and whether he was truly at the very top of the game at any point in his career. So make sure you're locked in on Friday morning for that one. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we'll see you very shortly, Ranks Squad. Take it easy. Peace.